WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and today I'm really pleased to bring you part two of the Houston Conference. In October, the Texas Homeowners for Reform, combined with St. Thomas University, League of Women Voters, and homeowners from across the state, all came together in Houston right after I hit and got together in a huge room, brightly decorated with beautiful red tablecloths, and came together to decide what to do. The fact that there are problems in homeowner associations across the country is no surprise to anybody. What we did, I just turned on the tape recorder and let it record as we went along, and what I've got is a segment of what happened. Actually, a few weeks ago, we broadcast the opening. This is the second part of the opening. At first, you're going to hear David Kahn talk about the various goals and try to prioritize some of the ideas and goals that they have in terms of what needs to be done in the legislative arena. The second person you're going to hear is Bob Adolph. Bob is Beanie Adolph's son and one of the Adolphs, because this is a collaborative family affair, who have got together collected information about foreclosure filings in Harris County and have got a website at hoadata.org. The initial information was just a couple of years. They have now collected all the information and have the information up to date. I'm not sure if the website has been updated yet, but they're working on it. And Bob made a presentation, so you'll hear the presentation. Unfortunately, I cannot show you what he showed these on the slides, but I think that a lot of it is very self-explanatory if you just listen and follow on. And then we come back to David, and we continue. We finish that section. And so anyway, sit back, relax, listen into what some of your fellow homeowners are doing to try to take back their homes in Texas.
Level playing field for litigation. All right? We talked about attorney fees. If you're sued and they win, they get everything. Mm-hmm. If you're sued and you win, you get nothing. Yeah. Yeah. We know that needs to basically flip. Now, Gwen had a situation where we sued them because we knew the problem you faced. We had to sue first. All right. Bill did the same thing. Ken did the same thing. Have to sue first. But in those situations, we want the rule that is one way. We want the rule that if Gwen or Bill or Ken wins, they get their fees back because they helped the whole association stop doing something illegal.
Yes.
If the association wins, are they entitled, should they be entitled to get their fees back from Gwen and Ken and Bill? Obviously, as a lawyer who represents homeowners, I want to say no, all right? And I'll tell you that as a practical matter, many lawsuits end with a split verdict, where you get much of what you want, but not everything. If the homeowners can't get their money back, there won't be people who represent them, almost ever. I'm one of the few who does it. If we can't ever get attorney fees, I won't be able to afford that. My wife will carry me to a limit, but not for everything. Are we going to politically try to force the legislature to recognize the imbalance that homeowners don't have money and therefore must have the right to get their attorney fees, and associations do have money and must not? Or is there some other approach? I really want to get through these different issues. Notice of the alleged violation, Ms. Blevins. How much of a priority? We all believe that before you sue someone, you should at least try knocking on their door. Ms. Blevins was 84 years old. She wasn't going to hurt anybody. They all knew her. How much of a priority is it to say knock before you sue? Amendment of deed restrictions. We keep seeing bills to, and this is going to affect people outside of Houston, to make it easier and easier to create homeowner associations. I think we've scared them in Austin. I don't think the people in Austin and San Antonio want more of these things, but the bills keep coming, and what they basically say is, suppose you bought in Houston in the Heights, an area where there are no deed restrictions, and 51% of your neighbors decide, are persuaded, they want to impose deed restrictions on you. Can they? What about 66% of your neighbors? What if two-thirds of the people want to force you to join an association? What if three-quarters do? Do we want to say never? Do we want it? Is this a priority for us? That's why it's on the list. Adopting rules without homeowner votes. Lots of associations, boards think they can just pass rules, including rules to set fines. Those rules weren't. You couldn't have known those rules when you bought your condo or your house. They aren't at the county.
I hate to interrupt, but one thing that we found is that they can change those rules arbitrarily, and there needs to be some way or other that they have to notify us and it has to go before a vote.
Okay, so that kind of thing, I think everybody in the room would agree with what you just said. How high a priority is it with respect to these other issues? Yes.
I want to ask you, because you're a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
When I'm having this trouble with my HOA, they're just making up rules as they go along arbitrarily. Yes. I didn't sign on to any of those rules when I bought my property. Doesn't contract law prevent that?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. And the problem is that, at least in Harris County, many of the judges have come to believe, we have this one case where this lady's being sued over a garden. That's the board president. She's being sued over a garden. And when we went for oral argument on, the question was, is the garden a nuisance? If you're a lawyer, you'll know that a nuisance is supposed to be a significant problem. Gardens have never been considered nuisances. No. There's the phrase neat and attractive, and the judge said, well, who's supposed to decide? Who makes the rule? He said, the only one I can think of is the homeowner association. We looked at it, and we had a dozen people there, including some of these ladies over here. We said, the homeowner! And he said, I don't know. So a lot of them need re-education about whose house is it. But this is a question. Creation of these rules, you're not the only one. This is happening in lots of places, big issues with condos. How high a priority is it when we go to Austin? We need to know. We all need to know when we sit down with the legislature, what are our top 10 issues? They'll listen to three, I think.
That should be one of them, because that means we have no legal protections. You cannot give any kind of informed consent.
But how does that compare? I'm not saying you're wrong. How does that compare to foreclosure? How does that compare to fines? You have the lists because we really need everybody to look at the totality, as we can think of it, of the picture.
It should be hiding.
Okay, all right. But talk to the people at your table. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's not my decision to make.
David, I have a quick question. Rules. Rules, generally, the board is allowed to make rules pertaining to the common area. But what I'm hearing is they're making rules that...
The rules we're talking about are much more than the common area.
They're acting like covenants, and those are not... They don't have that authority.
Some do. Some don't. Under Texas law, some associations have clauses that say the board can create reasonable rules for architectural restrictions, for example. They have that in their documents, and then they say you must come to the board to get approval for a development. And they create those rules long after you bought your house. They may say no, what do they call these things? It's when you have a covered carport. Well, I mean, just it's an example. I've seen this. The board says, under our architectural authority, we're going to add a rule that says no carports because we think they look crappy. Okay? That's what they think. We all understand this issue. My question is, we can take the position that boards have no right to make rules, or we can take an intermediate position that their only rules are for the common areas. How do we want to be thinking about that with the legislature when the legislators may say to us, here are the people who are elected by your neighbors. They want to make reasonable rules for the community. Why shouldn't we let them? We need to have arguments for that, and we need to be able to say to ourselves, is this as high a priority as this lady thinks, or is the rule against the $200 a day fine higher priority?
I think all of these levels, these are a lot of small things that all pertain to the contract.
Yeah.
I think that the overruling or the overriding issue of this whole situation is the validity of a contract. Whether the contract actually exists, and
so
it exists.
Two different kinds of problems come out of your question. Until about 10 years ago, Texas law was clear that if you look at a contract and it's a homeowner contract and it's not clear, then you interpret it in favor of the homeowner. It was crystal clear Supreme Court law until maybe it's 20 years ago. I can't remember the date. I can't remember if it's 87 or 97. In that year, which I think was 10 years ago, there was an unusual statute passed by the legislature, which itself was not clear. And the courts since then have struggled to decide whether the traditional rule of protecting homeowners when there's ambiguity should remain in effect, or whether the legislature has somehow changed the law to protect homeowners. This is a year that we could get the legislature to say, always interpret contracts to protect the homeowners. That doesn't help you if your contract says, and some of the deed restrictions do say, that association boards get to make the rules. So all I'm telling you is we've got a lot of issues. There are a lot of different ways they hurt us. Go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things that's brought up the problem in our area is the developer himself. When we bought the properties, we were supposed to get this, this, and this. He did not deliver. So my question to you is our contract really valid, and would that not be a way to fight this? Because I was promised
that. Let me answer that question. First, we talked about the must-be-built rules when mentioned in the list. Must be built. What that says is if they promise you a road that meets county standards, they need to deliver a road that meets county standards, and if they don't, the must be built rule would let you sue them.
Does that apply to schools too? They're always identified as schools, whether they're there or not.
It depends on what they would say. It depends on how that law would be written. If it says must be built means must build a school, then they got to build a school. If they say we're reserving space for the district to build a school, then no. But the other issue that you're raising is, suppose that they cheat you, the developer cheats you. This happens. Some of them go broke. Okay? If they go broke, suing them isn't an option. It doesn't help you. If they don't go broke and you have the right to a lawsuit, ask, I don't know if you're part of the suit, fills in, ask them privately. Okay, so then you know how much money you've paid.
Yes.
None of us lawyers. And I'm the most likely. None of us are going to go up against a developer represented by, I can't remember, you're not Vincent Elkins, but it's one of the big ones. Nobody's going to go up against these big law firms without you guys paying a substantial amount of money, and those people can't afford it. And shouldn't have to pay. They should have to do it right the first time. How do we fix that without going to court?
We paid, almost $90,000. To get water. I mean, so I can drink to live, okay? And they still...
$200,000. That's real. That's what a lawsuit costs against a big law firm. We can't go to court. It's not a solution. I mean, I don't want to do this work. I do a lot of the other work that Trish was talking about. I don't mind representing poor people who need food stamps for free in small lawsuits. Because people should get food stamps and they haven't got a prayer. But I can't afford a $200,000 lawsuit. I don't expect anybody else can. Question.
You said something about, do we have a right to actually talk to the board, or because they don't, they've never let us talk to anybody on the board ever.
The theory is yes.
Secret boards.
But in the theory is, but in the, when we get to this accountability to homeowners, if I ever get down the list, this is one of the issues, all right? One of the ways you get accountability is open records and open meetings. One of the things that we could do as part of that law is make it crystal clear that there must be at least, say, quarterly meetings where homeowners can address the board with, you know, on any issue that the homeowner wants. The city of Houston has a, what they call a pop-off session. Every city council meeting, every week, you can come. And some people are nuts. It's entertaining mildly. I suppose if I were elected to city council, I would be bemused. But some of the time, the pop-off sessions raise issues where people don't have a chance otherwise to raise it. Just had a friend of mine go up on an issue about somebody who got beat up in the city jail. And the city lawyers said, we have a video. We reviewed the video of you being beat up and decided that nothing was wrong. And they won't give out the video for the person who was beat up to see what it showed. So that came up in the pop-off session. That's a real important issue. Some of us have been so shut out that the only way we could raise our issues are through the pop-off equivalent. How important is that right? As against the right to get the actual books and records. Because when we talk about reserve accounts and budgeting for the roof or budgeting for repair of your sewer lines, which should have been budgeted for as a common expense, everybody should have been paying for it over time so that you weren't stuck with 570 bucks at once. How do we set those prices? Let me keep going just so we get to the whole list. So again, I don't want to keep this back and forth. 8, 9, 10, 11. Election rights. How many people have been denied the right to vote?
Yeah.
In America, we don't deny the right to vote. Right?
Our board does. Our board does.
Except in homeowner associations. We had a lawsuit over right to vote, and Gwen was denied the right to vote over 40 bucks, 50 bucks? Can't remember how much.
No, no.
We had the right to run for office. And so, the simplest rule is no restrictions on the right to vote. You own your property, you get to vote. Another way to do it is no restrictions on the right to run for office. But what if the person who's running for office is a convicted felon? We've had that problem. It took a year to get this convicted felon off of the board. And he was causing lots of problems. There, in that case, the deed restriction said the one thing they excluded you for was felonies. How much do you all care about that? If somebody who is going to hang out in your subdivision. I don't know whether that's a priority. Oversight. One of the issues is, what does it take to get a neutral observer? We went to the League of Women Voters. We're trying to get them on our side. I think we got a lot of support. I felt very positive about that session yesterday. There was a bill proposed in the last session. The best version of it would say that if 50 people or 25% of smaller groups like condos requested a neutral observer, we got a neutral observer. I probably could have lived with that piece of it. 50 is a lot of people, but, you know, you can do that if it's really important. Although, I should ask, I don't know if 50 is too many or not. But then their definition of neutral observer meant they didn't sit on the board and weren't married to someone who sat on the board and they weren't the lawyer. Am I talking too long? All right. Okay. Do you want to focus it? Using now? Okay. We're going to interrupt me because I'm talking too long.
Because we're interrupting you.
Well, but we have one of our special guests, and he's got a limited time frame, and this lets me take a break as well. Bob Adel, son of Beanie Adel, one of the clan, and these people have done collectively a terrific job for all of us. And Bob, one of his special responsibilities, has been proving just how bad the situation is in Harris County with lawsuits, and I'll let him explain how he has recently updated that information just in time for our meeting in the legislative session.
Okay, so thank you, introduction, David. And I also heard about the people in the same family being on boards. We don't live in the same subdivision, so we're not on the same board. But we have, as a family and with David's help and some other people's help, put together this study. And it's posted on the web, so I'm gonna have a fairly quick slideshow just to show you what we're doing from a data standpoint and how you might be able to do some of this yourself. There's a website called hoadata.org. That's the homepage for it right now. And it shows a study that we did from 1985 to 2001 for Harris County, where we looked at all the foreclosure filings from HOAs in the county and tabulated them. And you can see that little graphic there that shows the increasing number of those filings. So these are not foreclosures. I want to make that very clear. These are filings threatening foreclosure, trying to collect money from homeowners. So, and David, if I make a mistake, I'll turn on some more, please. I have several slides I'm going to go very quickly through, but I wanted to do it graphically so you can see what's going on. Talk about foreclosure-related filings, talk about Harris County, the records, courts, clerk's records, the data itself, some examples of the counts that we make, and examples of plots. I won't quite go into the history of all of this. My mom can at some point because there's a thought for that, but this started with paper and then we eventually went electronic because the numbers were so high. So first of all, this is what a foreclosure-related filing might look like. This is an actual document. This one's from Sage Meadow against someone. It's a court filing. It generally threatens foreclosure. It's trying to collect money for something. In this case, if I just go through it, from one of the pages, there's a little detail that says there's a maintenance charge that appears to not have been paid. And you can look over here and you will see the word foreclosure is in here. So the threat is there. And another part of the document actually is where they're asking the court for action, and they're saying foreclosure and order of sale. So this is a typical document. We did have a phone or email from one officer and one HOA that said we never do these sort of things. And my brother Tom, who is also an attorney, went and pulled documents from that HOA. And in fact, every one of the documents threatened foreclosure. But the officers didn't realize they were threatening foreclosure. They thought they were just collecting. And but in fact, every one of these was received with that threat.
Did
so,
they change?
I'm sorry?
Didn't they stop doing the foreclosures?
We don't know. We really don't. I think that officer may have resigned or gotten off the board at some point. And we don't know the whole story.
But we asked, they got rid of it, right?
You never know. I don't know. I wish we had more on that, but it was very persistent for a while. And we try to be very objective with this website. This is a study, and we try to really treat it in an academic way. So we try not to take a position, even when the data may be overwhelming. And so in this case, we simply removed that data from the website until we researched the documents and said, nope, these are different foreclosures, and we looked back up. So we're trying to be very neutral and objective in how we tabulate this. So, first of all, the study is on Harris County. So, unfortunately, it's not Fort Bend or Montgomery or Brazoria or Chambers or anything else. So, if you're in this area, but you're outside of Harris County, I'm sorry, we don't have that data. But I'll show you what we've got, and at least you can see how you might be able to get some information. Harris County's pretty large, quite a few subdivisions in here. And even though the growth is outside of Houston, there's still a lot inside as well. And, lots of opportunities for HOAs to be created. So, where do we get the information on these filings? We get them from the Harris County District Courts. There's 25 of them. The Harris County Civil Courts, there's 4. And we wanted to get them from the Justice of the Peace Courts. And when we first started this activity, a few showed up in paper. So we got a few from there, but it wasn't online. And when the study got really serious and the numbers were large, we had to go online. It had to be electronic. Doing this with paper is overwhelming, and we'd still be counting today if we were doing it on paper. All these courts have a clerk's office. They have databases. And I just checked this morning when I was preparing this, and it turns out the JP database is online now. But it is more difficult to search than any of the others, and the others have their own difficulties. It's a 12-digit number, including the alphabet, and that's not being searched. So I would be sucking data out of that for a year or two, I think, to get it out. It's not for trivial exercise. You can't do it any other way. The others, there's some ways to do it, and I'll show you. So what we looked at are the Harris County District Courts and the Harris County Civil Courts. Okay, the records that are online are not the document. I showed you what a foreclosure filing would look like. That is not what's online. That was a piece of paper that we actually scanned. The online records are instead case tracking information. They have record of case events, the dates, names, types of actions, a lot of which I still have trouble understanding because they're legalese, but random extra info depending on probably the actual clerk typing the information in. At least one clerk was really nice and put a lot of dollar information in that we could pull out. Most of them, it's just the standard stuff. And this is what it looks like when it comes off the web. It's a long series of information. That is for one single file. And some of them are many pages long. And I'll explain what that means in a second in terms of getting this information. And there's no access, again, to the actual court file. So what we're really getting in our database, if you think of an Excel spreadsheet, this is one row where we have the name of the defendant, the plaintiff, the date, the court, the attorney, things like that, the HOA report. So this is, in one slide, I'm going to show you what the work is that we did. It's not detailed, it's rather large, but we've got three court systems in Harris County, the district, the civil, and the JPs. The JPs, we just don't have information from right now. So those, we only pulled a few example records from 1 year. It really doesn't count in the scheme of things. But the district courts and the civil courts, we surveyed in great detail. And we covered what's online right now is 1985 to 2001. That was processed in 2002. We're all volunteers. We have lives to live, so we didn't do much on it for a while, but recently, we pulled in data from 2002 to 2007, and I'm going to show you some of that result now. It's not online yet. What happens is, if we go to the district court, the database is at least searchable by type of action. Is it a foreclosure? Is it an HOA action? Is it a lien? Is it a breach of contract or whatever? And through looking through records for quite some time, we've come up with 10 case types that seem to bear fruit that they may contain an HOA action. Obviously, foreclosure and HOA, those categories contain most of it. So we ended up with 10 case types, and we searched and came up with over 300,000 records. And I showed you what the records look like. It could be several pages of information. And at one point, David hired an intern, and that person went to the district courts and got that information on CD and pulled it in that way because it became harder to get from them. Civil courts have a very nice online database. It's easy to access, except you got to know the case number. That's all the information you really have. You can sometimes put a name, but they don't type the HOA names the same. So it's not easy to do that one. So the only way to get that information was to download every single record from civil courts from 1985 through 2007, which is 450,000 records. So that takes a little while. So those have been pulled in, and again, I showed you it was two or three pages of stuff. We did some custom software and parsed that mess of information to bring it down to case number, name of defendant, name of HOA, name of attorney, court information, disposition at the end, all the transactions that took place, and that becomes one line in our database. When we're finished, we still have 800,000 records between the two court systems. Now what we do is we start removing all the stuff that doesn't, you know, city court, that's not in here, Harris County actions, not in there, remove all those things. When we're finally finished, it's a lot of manual filtering. We come down to the 12,000 or so records from each of the court systems. Those go into our database of 25,000 records. Now, a big apology, that's not online. Our website is just a report. It doesn't have interaction where you can search. But we have offered, well, when people ask for specific information, we'll give it. We don't hand the database out, but we will give information. So anyway, in our database, we have 25,000 foreclosure filings from Harris County HOAs alone, and that does not include the JP court system, except for the 100. That's what it took to do this study. Excuse me. So when we're finished, we have tallies. We've counted how many actions there were from a given HOA. So this is a list of about 1,000 HOAs in Harris County. Now, HOAs, this is as they were recorded in the court of records. Try not to use any interpretation, but I did fix spelling and things like that, so I get all of them the same.
On your website also?
Some of this is. A report like this is available through 2001 on the website.
Okay.
That right there is.
I was going to say, that's too hard for me to read.
I know. No, you have to. And it wasn't meant to be read in this slide. I'm trying to show you what it looked like. But this is an alphabetical list of the HOAs as we pulled them out of the court records. And I've converted their names to be standardized and so forth. Just to let you know, one reason there's so many is we also have some areas that have separate actions from Section 1 than from Section 3, because some sections may be separately acted legally. Sometimes it's the whole thing, but you never know. So try not to interpret that. If there's a whole lot of actions in Section 3, we'll list it that way. So this is a list of actions for HOAs from 1985 through 2007. It's just totaling them. Remember, I want to say this again. These are not foreclosures. These are foreclosure filings. It's a threat of foreclosure. I don't know how many of these go to foreclosure. I don't think many do, but I don't really know. The only thing I know is this action was taken. And even when the judgment at the end would be foreclosure, people often settle. So you don't really know how many went all the way to taking the house away. But whatever it was, that action was threatened and taken.
But isn't it illegal? Say, for example, you filed a foreclosure against me, and I paid all my legal fees, all my maintenance fees, and et cetera, to you already, and I'm up to date. Isn't it illegal for you to keep it on the website, saying that there's a lien or a foreclosure against me?
Well, okay, so I'm not an attorney, so I can't say legally or illegal, but I can say this is public data.
He's not
identifying anybody.
You're not identifying
individuals. No, there's no names on here. No.
Oh, okay.
The only names are those are names of HOAs.
Okay.
Sorry. No, absolutely no names of individuals, except for attorneys. But again, this is public information. And every bit of this, you can go to the web and if you type in a case number, you can get this information. So this is absolutely public information. But no, we're not putting names of the defendants. We do have it in our database because that's part of the identification.
But that says something over there. So,
I understand. From a distance, it's just, but this is a list of HOAs and their activity over the years. Now, we can, there's lots of ways to look at the data. So, here's what you might be interested in. These are the most active HOAs in Harris County over that period. Sterling Green is at the top. He's been at the top since we started looking. Even on paper, it was at the top. And then Mission Bend and so forth. But that information we have on the website through 2001, and we'll post soon this new reports. So we can do the same thing as well. We can look at the filings. This full detail is on the website, but parts of it are. This would be, let's look at the top HOA as an example, Sterling Green. And now we can look over the years, the activity, and we can look at which attorneys are involved in that activity. So you can get an idea of what's going on in various neighborhoods. What happens and so forth.
Did you say this will be available on the
HOA? Well, what's available right now is this list without this detail right here, but these totals are here. So you can see who the attorneys are through 2001 for the HOAs. And we'll post this sort of information soon, in a few weeks. I've got to process this into a
website.
Have the attorneys been
trying to actually shut you down?
No. There's been some interesting comments from the attorneys, and I'm bad at quoting, but one of the attorneys, when we pointed out the number, or it was a reporter asked, and they just said, "Oh, I'm sure it's more than that." So, it's not the publishing for them.
Also, Mr. Gates.
Yes.
Bob, you get yourself in trouble.
Trying not, yeah. Okay, so anyway, that's an example of activity in the neighborhood. The other one, of course, is a lot of the officers in HOAs aren't even aware of this activity. So, That we have had evidence of that. So attorneys with the most filings, there are 500 attorneys, but I mean that's how it is. But a lot of the attorneys aren't listed on the website. They only have 5 filings over 20 years. We're not going to list that name, so that we lump those out. But the ones that matter, the ones who are big in the business, and you can see it, Mr. Gannon, Mr. Bartling, Mr. Lewis, Mr. Gaynor, O'Neill, and so on, they're at the top of the list. And if any of you have been involved in things in this area, you're probably familiar with these names. So just as an example, let's take the top attorney, Mr. Gannon, and this is that same kind of breakdown. Now, instead of the HOA listing its attorneys, this is the attorney, Mr. Gannon, and alphabetically the HOAs that he has filings for. It doesn't fit on one screen, so there's the second page, and there's a few more lines below that. I didn't want it to be totally illegible, but he's a busy person, and this is the Sterling Green line right here. And there's other Sterling Green HOAs that he's had some business with, too.
Bob, let me make a comment on this one point. There's a huge part of the problem, and there are a few other people who are included in this, are a huge part of the problem. It's a very small number of lawyers. Now, as a lawyer, I will tell you there are a lot of lawyers who are assholes. Not run into it. But most of them don't practice.
practice in this area. And that gives us some hope, because the others collectively have a ton of money and they make lots of campaign contributions and know a lot of their buddies who run for office. We only need to stop. If we stop the top 25, that would radically improve the situation for lawyers, for homeowners. So we're not taking on Vincent and Elkins in its entirety. I'm not saying it would solve all the problems, but there are really a very small number of lawyers who are inflicting huge damage.
But you're fighting some major organizations, ULI, Developers Association.
There are some big organizations, but the number of lawyers...
These guys are all individuals.
All of the bars. That's all I want to say. Yeah. This meeting is very important, because what we can show to the legislators is, even if you gave us everything we wanted, we're only affecting a very small number of lawyers. They're not hurting their personal friends. Gammon doesn't control a lot of votes by himself. That's my own point. It's not a huge institution against us.
Just a point on how to display this.
Yeah.
A Pareto chart would be very nice, where you have this stacked up and you have like winning Gammon. And
you
show the percentage.
Yeah. No, we do have a variety of ones. Yeah. The Pareto, the problem is it's 500. So it's, but I mean, we can do a Pareto for like the small group, the top 20.
I'll link to the Bar Association.
Yeah. Well, we do have a reference page that has links to a lot of things. We haven't done that one lately, but it's, you'll see some of the plots that we have. And most of them are online. Yes.
Okay. Is that going to be on the website?
Oh, that's on the website right now, but the update for 2007 isn't. But 2001, that was...
Oh, 2007. Yeah.
These guys practice individually. They're not members of Vincent Elkins or Fulbright and George.
I don't study that, but I will tell you that the listings sometimes are Gammon and Associates.
But they're not gigantic.
In certain reports, it comes in by attorney.
We found in city elections in Fort Bend County that Vincent Elkins, they have associations. Mark Markell, the tag team does, along with some of these crowds, Power ELLP, there's some definite...
Because if they're attached, you're dealing with huge organized crime organizations.
Let me answer that question. We've looked into this, and it's too hard for us. We're trying to be very objective and factual. And we don't know over the course of 20-some-odd years when attorneys moved from firm to firm or if their action was independent of the firm. We just don't know.
They have name changes, too, on your list. Mark Markell shows up in a series of different, so it keeps them out of the top 20. Together, it knocks them right back up.
So we've got name changes I try to catch, but if they list themselves as, so-and-so and so-and-so, it changes, and I can't separate that. That was a legal name at some point. So you have to use do your own tallying there. But again, we're trying to be extremely objective, and we don't know, when we see a listing, if that was in association with someone else or not. That's all that's in the court record, and that's what we do.
We have these finance reports, another good place to go. You'll see all the same clicks showing up for certain candidates. We did that. We followed the crowd that did that. In 2004, we found Swift folks out in Fort Bend County, found Blaze stopping there.
Those numbers, each one of those filing for a financial amount, each filing, not only for the lawyer, but also for the court?
Yes.
On
the website, so again, there was at least one clerk that was very dutiful in entering information. They entered attorney fees, judgment amount, and various court fees in this sort of written record. And so, we tried. Again, there's 800,000 records.
Yeah,
so it's
not part of
the record. So we wrote a little bit of custom software to try to grab that information. And where it parsed very well. And so I don't have that plot here, but online you can see a plot where we show the attorney fees and the judgment. The judgment was usually less than the attorney fees. And we did do a tally, if I remember the number right, I think for 50% of the judgments, there was a 75-1 ratio between the judgment and the value of the house, just to show how out of whack the... what was being, if the house was threatened for something that was around 1 or 2%. But there is some information, and again, I think one clerk just did a great job putting this information in, so we got it. Most of the records are fine. Okay, so let's move on, because I don't want to take up too much of your time. But this is a summary of the data. And it does, plots do tell a story pretty nicely, as the gentleman that mentioned Pareto. So this is 1985 through 2007, total filings in the two court systems, with a tiny little bit of JT, When we first started this, my mother and brother went and got some records from the JP, and on paper there were about 100. But we never could get it online. So this is a meaningless blip here. We don't know what the size of it is, and we have no idea what happens otherwise. But the blue and the red are as accurate as we can get. I would say they're good to a percent, probably better. And those are total actions in the civil courts and the district courts. We had reached 1,500 in the year 2000 and 2001, and now we're over 2,000. And I'm not going to interpret this. I'll just let you know. We came out with our data in 2002, and that was a year where the numbers were a little low, or whatever that means. I don't know if light had an effect on things, but obviously after that, so the trend is continuing. During this time, Houston had quite a bit of growth, lots of new homes. New homes tend to be in HOAs, more activity. So whether the activity, the rate of activity changed, or simply there was a larger base of homes to go by, I don't have that information. We've done a lot of other analysis. I have one more plot, and then I'll wrap up. We did a lot of analysis trying to look at management companies. There's just not enough information. So we really don't do anything there. We can't even connect management companies with HOAs. That's changing landscape. There's insufficient information. We're volunteers, just not the time. The other piece of information is trying to look at the size of a subdivision, which HAR.com has information on. You have to manually go and get each one. It has pricing information, so you can look at how prices have changed over time. And you can then look. You can look at size of homes, number of homes, value of homes to see how this relates to activity. The problem is that data is hard to come by. We did it in 2001. I don't know if we'll get it for 2007, but there's an example of that. So let me just show you one plot, which is, and this goes to a common thing that we hear regarding the importance of doing this kind of action, foreclosure and filing actions, is to bolster prices. So this is looking at price trends from 1994 to 2000 in all the subdivisions that we can get information on. HAR.com does have that data. You go there, you can look at any subdivision and get it. We looked at the increase in value of the homes in that subdivision, median increase, and we split it between HOAs that had filings and HOAs that didn't. And what we found was if you didn't have filings, the price change was better, 8% per year. If you did have filings, it was around 5% per year. For the whole group, it was around 6%. So, take it that way. But whatever it was, we didn't see that subdivisions that filed liens against people and took foreclosure filings against people were actually having an improvement in the group. So, info is available at hoadata.org. Just Google HOA data and it comes up. It's that easy to find the website. I don't know when the update will be, but I know that my mother and David called to make her out of the the update requires converting a lot of these Excel sheets into something you can see on the web. But there's plenty of information there.
We were linking to you on the blog, and we were arguing with management people, and it's amazing the reaction they would get just when we would put a live link to your site. They did not like us sharing that information to the general public in a blog.
Again, we try to be very academic. And there's another family member, my son, who's done a study, statistical study on this, and he also was trying, he is an academic, so he was trying to be objective. So we've tried very carefully to do that. That's all I'll say there. But any questions? And otherwise, I'll turn it back over.
Are you doing that last one on the from 2000 to 2007 where you showed the increase with the filings and how that affects the home prices?
Probably not. It's a huge step. Right now, getting the filings in there, I'll have that.
That would make the most persuasive argument to anybody, home management, and to the legislature, that these filings, when they file, actually hurts the home prices. Mm-hmm. In this environment, when home prices are going down, everybody wants to do something that retains it. And the argument for these restrictions and for enforcing them is that it keeps our community and their home prices steady.
Right.
And that chart just shows that is
it doesn't. No, it really doesn't.
And that is very important, I would think, in persuading anybody.
Agreed. That study still stands on its own, which if we don't have that period. The problem is getting this additional data, and it's remarkably difficult study to do to link all these things. But basically, I had to process all 1,000 subdivisions and a lot of it. If there's time and motivation, I'll try to do it. It's just with volunteer activities, it's one of those things. So this was the big goal was getting the records in there.
Thank you.
Understood. We did get one data point that came from the mortgage foreclosure industry, and I can't remember the statistic, maybe you might, but it was that every 100 foreclosures causes a certain percent drop in the value of the homes in a neighborhood. It was a national statistic. So it didn't say what the reason for foreclosure was, but it said that this caused prices to drop.
Is the target range still the same? Originally, you posted something about how a certain home range was intended to be targeted.
So I don't have that information, because again, I have to build this AJR database up to date to do that. But it was definitely, it was undeniable. The plot that we had before was lower end homes were overly targeted, just dramatically. And below, this is in 2001 or 2000, it was under $100,000 homes. I forget the percentage, it was huge.
Please don't throw rocks at me, but I retired
from
this
I didn't see their name. Yeah, I didn't.
They don't have anything to do with that.
Yeah, I haven't seen their name.
Do they have a high number of foreclosures?
No. I have not seen their name anywhere.
No, they work more with the developers and the contractors and the commissioners' courts and the, and Allen Pumpkins, who really was a spinoff from Vincent Elkins. And then they turned involved in politics. They then segue into some of these. I mean, this is just, one reason we go is we ran candidates in front of D.C. and the city council that was very much involved with some of this.
So I can't say which firms are involved. In the civil courts, they oftentimes put the firm name, and I think they stopped doing that. In the district courts, it's always the ADA number of the attorney and therefore the attorney name. And I have nothing in there that tells me what firm you're with. So I honestly don't know firms. And I think going by attorney is probably the right way.
I can pick on the ADA.
Yeah, No, I don't see it.
And it's important that they don't, because it gives us a better chance of winning. If B&E were really locked into this system, it would be much harder. And one of the good things is that, B&E has better things to do with their time, frankly, than pick on people who don't have any money. And this study that Bob did first, the rich subdivisions in this town, by and large, don't use foreclosure as a tool. Not a realistic option. If you're living in River Oaks, a $2,000 fine is really not going to cause you to lose your house. They don't try. The problem is that for most of it's $2,000. We don't live in River Oaks. $2,000 is a lot of money. And they're using this as a terror tactic. I like that reference. The Patriot Act. I think we should all give Bob and his whole family a big round of applause. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. The thing that I just discovered, you may not know this, but I did tell your mom where it came there. There's this site is hoadata.org, very modest. They just took one domain name. And so one of the associations decided to confuse the picture, and they have taken hoadata.com. And they are literally running it as an industry-sponsored, we will help homeowners website as a way to steal and contest.
They do that with HRC, too. They've got some imitation sites for them.
So you must be doing something very right. We know that. They know that. Hopefully the legislature will learn that in the next session.
Great.
Legislative research offices have used HOA data on their research.
Oh, really?
I'll go cite it
that
not too long ago.
We can cite it. But I didn't realize it. So that's it. One other note for those of you that aren't or wherever county you're in, it's worth just taking a stab if you're trying to find out what's going on. You go to Google and you can say Fort Bend County Civil Court Clerk, and you'll usually get a link. And if you look in there, there'll be usually something search database. Fort Bend County will show you some of the filings, so you can see the documents. But it's not easy to search, and you kind of skim through. Yep.
Just like what you just said, I just noticed that if you get the attorney, a particular attorney's his license number, and you go into a particular county, if you run his license number through the court system, you'll get everything that he's working on. Mm-hmm. So you can see what he's up to. And who he's going after. If you go in, and if you can't get online and you go into the clerk of court's office,
right,
you can use your computer system and just run his bar association number.
The problem is that the online interface usually is very limited. Yeah. A lot of times it's court docket oriented, so you just put in your docket. which you said you can always go to a counter somewhere and give them more information. But in the civil court case, they can't search by HOA foreclosure either. I mean, the only way to do it is to, eventually the only way was to pull every single record and scan it. So it was a rather large effort. Others, you can go across the counter and get things. And that's what David did when he brought his intern in last summer. And went to the counter and they did the scan. It was fairly easy.
Well, like I went into down in Harris County, Russell Holt, because that's the guy that was trying to take my house. I mean, and if you put his license number in there, you can see all the other people he's going after, and you have a good idea of what he's up to.
Right. So, and that was, it used to be that way on the online district court. You could put in the attorney name if you get somewhere where the ABA is working. The way I scan the way I finally find these data is I look for by attorney name. Yes. All right, thank you all very much.
All right, so I have taken a vote of the only person who matters to me today. Beanie told me, ask when. All right? What we're going to do is we're going to go to the small group sessions. I'm going to stop talking. Otherwise, we should do the Q&A all afternoon. Look at the issues we talked about, please. Look at the issues we didn't talk about. What are the questions that we need? What are the solutions that we need from the legislators? And how are we going to set priorities for when we go to the sessions? What are the tactics you may want that we want to develop? Do we want to have a lobby day? How do we want to reach out to our? This is at the end of the handout. We talk about organizing neighbors, meeting with legislators, legislative day, testifying at hearings. Just a minute. We'll come more questions. What do we want on websites? Listings of these lawsuits? Should every association have to list its lawsuit? That scared the pants off the lawyers when Beanie and I were in this room, and it was proposed by one of the legislative people, and the lawyers on the other side went ballistic because they know they can't escape the light of day. What else do we want on websites?
Thank you for joining us today. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.